I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high and canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa.
Good evening, Vashon Island. I am Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies on KVSH, Voice of Vashon 101.9. Today we have with us a longtime Vashon person, when she isn't gallivanting all over the world, that is, Kate O'Kane. And right now she's freshly back from a very long stay with her family in England, correct, Kate?
Correct. Nice to be here. It's nice to be home. I had a lovely time in England, but certainly good to be back on the island.
And how long were you there?
We were actually there in the end for 4 months, and mainly in the north of England. So the beautiful dark satanic mills of Wigan, Lancashire, which hearers have heard me speak about on other shows before. We might have to do a Cats and Jammer Follies about England and Wigan.
Oh, I would love to.
But we did get a lovely trip down towards my brother and Cornwall, and then my husband spent some time in Wales as well. So, and we were up in Scotland. So we did a proper United Kingdom kind of like, yeah, we did a proper United Kingdom kind of trip, which is beautiful,
lovely. Especially
after being away for so long and not being able to get there. So.
And you were there the whole time.
Yeah.
You never left the
island. We never left the island.
Good for you. Well, you've been on the show with us before. It's been a minute now.
Yeah.
It's been probably about a year.
Yeah, probably.
And last time you were here, you talked about some crazy stories that you had encountered in the great country of Russia. Mother Russia.
Mother Russia, yes. And a little bit in China and then a little bit in India. So bit of Asia, I guess, and Eurasia on that one.
And today you're going to take us to Africa.
Yeah. So
tell me about it.
Very lucky through my job to get to travel a lot, or previously get to travel a lot, these days a little bit less. So I'm living a bit vicariously through people.
What is your job that takes you around?
So I work in international development, but also previously I worked in advertising and I actually lived in Asia. So that helped. And then now with international development, I travel around to different countries working on programs or working with the countries, usually on health or education or, you know, women's equality, trying to ensure that supposedly all the great things we have in the United States of America, we're bringing and supporting
societies.
Well, you know, sometimes you sit there and, you know, kids don't have clean water in Flint and, you know, people are living without roofs or food. You just sit there and kind of go, maybe we should be looking a little closer to home.
I know. I agree.
That's both
with
the US and the UK and any country that is deemed developed in that kind of way. But yeah, so I get to travel around.
Yeah, tell me, what were you doing in Africa?
So, first of all, I lived there for a couple of years. I lived in Botswana, but I'm not really going to talk about Botswana today. That can be another show.
Okay.
Where I wanted to talk about was East Africa and the countries like Uganda and Ethiopia and South Sudan. And when I was there in these places, it was oftentimes I was going over on a work trip and then I sneaked in a little bit of extra time to just try and have a little bit of a look around, because why not, you know, take the opportunity while you can.
Yeah.
And so really developed a love of East Africa. It's such a vibrant, vibrant place. But I think oftentimes when we think of places like Ethiopia or South Sudan, all we think about is famine or civil war, because that's what we hear about.
Yeah,
on the
it
news.
Is what we hear about.
And so wanting to sort of maybe just try and change people's perspectives a little bit, I thought it'd be cool to talk about some of those places
today. I'm so glad that you're here to do that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think the first thing I wanted to say, though, is like, just obviously I'm not from that part of the world. And I'm very conscious, especially with everything that's happened in the world, of this sort of like white colonialist kind of like sentiment that I think often pervades these conversations. And, you know, when you do look into the history of these places, the colonial background, the ways in which my country for sure went in and just took over.
Yeah, it's really deep.
It's really deep and has left a lot, you know. So when we do think of famine and civil war, it is usually courtesy of some way in which we've gone in and messed things up, you know, 100, 200 years ago. So I want to be acknowledging of that. I also am not an East Africa history expert. And so I am more than welcome to be fact-checked by the East Africa history experts out there on the island. But, you know, I did have a look in, and just looking at any of these countries, Uganda, I think we're actually going to hear in a minute a little bit of music from Uganda from Bobby Wine, who was the former presidential candidate there, trying to get rid of the guy who's been in power for 36 years.
He's still in power.
Yeah, Bobby Wine was trying to get him removed. In fact, why don't we just listen to a little bit?
Yeah, and then I want to hear a little bit about Bobby Wine's politics.
Body man on number one, I Tony on Kawakawani. So we no lie to the world, sin. Make the people know the truth, sin. And when we surviving on the ghetto, man. Nali no moon tesa no muchala sigue chiwani. Hey, nali na pola ninzempe ya kuwe miranga. Kumanga songa ya yala, akaja site ya kuia. Hey, amabu bona vera nenge simula sigue chiwani. Hey, chiwani chan vera neva wetane tuvale chisimbi. Kumanga kampala kuia, polo mamboso obusute. Mugeto neri muwalodi, guli woda kona kuia. The one who more Kampala and so we are done. Your massive at you one in the Mositavia and Tabula done. Your massive at you one in the Mogeto and so we are done. Your massive at you one in Alonesitavia and Tabula done. Your massive at you one in Chiwani, Chiwani, your massive at you one in.
That is a great song. It definitely makes you want to boogie.
Well, as you noticed, I kind of got off a little bit and did a bit of African dancing there because it just makes you want to move. But yeah, Bobby Wine was the artist there, and he's known really, I think, as the president of the ghetto in Kampala in Uganda, and tried to become president, had a whole campaign.
Was he supported?
He was very supported, but Museveni has been in power for 36 years. And just a little bit like, you know,
and what is
recent stories here, you know, suppression of election voting.
Yeah, I mean, nobody should be in power for 36 years.
And that's what you see in a lot of countries, not just in East Africa, but in former colonies, this fact that because of so many of the issues that we created by putting in countries where tribes were originally, and so not really having the normal power structures. So, you know, we as colonial masters went in and decided this is Uganda and this is Ethiopia.
And these and are this, how you should
yeah,
practice
and,
your
you know,
politics.
In so many places. Yeah, exactly. What does democracy look like?
Right.
Well, it looks like this in the US. And then, you know, this
sort
is
of.
What it looks like in Africa. And we send election observers over to Africa. But, you know, oftentimes they're still trying to learn what actually independence and what democracy and management looks like to them. So, it's a fascinating country from, and all of them, you know, Ethiopia as well. South Sudan just came out of civil war a few years ago. And when I visited it, it was 1 year after independence.
Wow. Fledgling.
So fledgling, but yeah. So much passion and desire to be the country that they think they can be and they want to be. And, you know, and oftentimes really interesting things like the first independence beer. So, you know, sitting there in Juba having a beer that's called Independence because they're so proud of their independence.
That's beautiful.
But the second day that I was there, a body was dropped off in front of the government because the tribal conflict was still happening. And so there was still a lot of aggression. And, you know, the big thing in Juba, the big business at that stage was the UN mission to South Sudan. And that was mainly where all the money was coming in because the country was still
so
fledgling, was coming in from the UN and from international partners. And you just hope that, you know, it's going to take time, but you hope that these countries get there to be able to move forward. And hopefully, you know, foreign influence can remove itself from and allow them to have the space they need to
to create what they need to do for themselves.
Exactly.
So how long were you in South Sudan?
In South Sudan, I was just there for a couple of weeks. And in most of these places, you know, when it's a work trip, you're in for a couple of weeks. But with Ethiopia.
But did you say you lived there for a couple of years?
I lived in Botswana, further south, yeah, for a couple of years. Yeah. No, I'd love to have lived in South Sudan. I thought it was just a fascinating place. But most places, and again, you know, it's kind of like the watch out here. You go in, you spend a couple of weeks, and there's no way to get the history, the knowledge, the culture,
course,
the language, the connections that you would like. I've spent a lot more time in both Uganda and Ethiopia. And Uganda is one of those amazing places where it really looks like, I think, the Africa of your dreams. It's kind of like, it's very vibrant. It's almost jungle-like because it's right in the center of Africa. And when you arrive and when you fly into the airport in Entebbe, which is about an hour's drive away from the capital, you're landing next to a lake. And so you're coming in and it's just this really dramatically beautiful starting point for your visit. And you get into the center of Kampala, and one of the things that I wanted to talk about was just the animals you see in Africa. I mean, everyone thinks, oh, safaris, but
of course,
it's actually just the animals you see just in general. So in Kampala,
like what would you see?
So they have these things called marabou storks, and they are massive birds, and they're sort of like basically the unofficial national bird of the country. And I remember staying in the hotel and thinking,
how big is massive? I just want to get a view in my mind.
As big as me, right? So tall, like 5'3". Could probably, you know, be a good midweight in terms of like a boxing match. And they, you know, they have the big beaks. And where you're sort of like staying, usually, you know, you're staying in the center of Kampala. These storks will fly past your hotel windows, and unless you know they're there, you honestly think there is a glider about to come in through your window. And then you look outside and it's just a massive bird. And they're known sort of like basically for hanging out at the dumpsters.
I want to see that.
People should just Google marabou storks, Kampala, Uganda. They hang out by the dumpsters because they're not fed enough. And they're basically like, I guess, the pigeons of Kampala, as you'd have in London, but 27,000 times bigger and much more scary, almost prehistoric in the scariness of them. So the birds are pretty amazing. And then a little bit like Vashon, you've got a lot of chickens roaming everywhere in Africa. Yeah. And so I've sat in many health clinics where, you know, some lady has been having a very intimate procedure or, you know, giving birth, and the chicken just wanders by, has a little look, might even kind of like jump up onto the bed, and you're like, that doesn't feel hygienic, and then carrying on wandering by. And you do spend a bit of time wondering, why is there a chicken in this clinic? And so you go outside and you realize that people have brought their chickens because...
With them.
With them. Firstly, because, you know, who else is going to look after chickens? But also, there's no waiting rooms. There's no kind of like services around the clinics. So they've also brought their beds, and they've also brought a little bit of a kitchen. And the chicken's basically dinner. Because it's not full service. Like, if you go to a hospital here, you vaguely hope you might get fed if you're there for a few days. Not in Uganda. And in most of these places, healthcare is so rudimentary that they're taking food for the patients because they will be feeding them themselves.
So
the
it's
chicken
kind of like
it's the takeaway. Yeah, you're basically bringing dinner with you.
Well, if that, you know, that works. I mean,
absolutely. I mean, you vaguely hope that, you know, universal healthcare and his health systems might get strengthened, but it's taking time. And so in the meantime, the chickens are being brought to feed the patients.
Well, I mean, we're, you know, quote unquote, developed country, and yet we have no universal healthcare.
Exactly.
And so
don't get me started on that. That's a whole other hot conversation.
Oftentimes I would like to pay with the chicken too.
Exactly.
Please.
Would it be nice? But it gets you back to the question, like, what came first, the chicken or the egg, right? Especially when you're in a maternity ward and there's chickens walking by. So
in these situations, I mean, you are working closely with people.
Yeah. And, you know, oftentimes it's going in and maybe helping build capacity. Sometimes it's just going in with a different point of view, because oftentimes people have not had the ability to travel or engage. Oftentimes when I've been going there, it has been with partners that the nonprofit is working with. So the first time I went to Uganda, I went with a large pharmaceutical company that was interested in ensuring that people had access to family planning, had access to the drugs needed, and also access to drugs that would either support access to abortion or would support access for women to have postpartum support care as well, and care. So you're visiting the first time I was in Uganda, we took a trip out to a very small village. Even just those trips, sitting in the back of the cars, you're going through really big, dusty red roads. I mean, hopefully they're dusty. If the floods have come, they're literally like marshes, and oftentimes you're getting out and wading across. But most of the times they're dusty red roads, and you get to a village where it really is mud huts, but people are so meticulously clean. You know, they're sweeping in front of their mud huts. Everything is, the pride that women generally have in their homes is still amazing. And I met...
And do you like... get to share meals with them?
Yeah, sometimes. Although, I mean, you have to try and not make it feel as though, you know, this isn't like poverty tourism. You're going, you've got a job, and you want to be respectful of the fact you're coming to ask them for information. And so we oftentimes will try to keep it on much more of a business approach.
More professional.
And more professional, that we are being respectful of their time. They have maybe their farm to tend, or they have a job that they need to get on their bike and get to, or they have, you know, especially if we're dealing with family planning, 12 children that need managing and sorting out. And but it is always these experiences when you travel and you meet these women. I met a woman who was the same age as me. I think I was probably 36 at the time. And, you know, standing next to her being the same age, and she'd had 12 children. And 9 of them had survived. And she looked ancient. You know, you could just see the stress in her life and how exhausted she was. And then her husband came, and I think he was maybe in his early 40s, but he looked 70. And you can just see, you know, life is hard.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, you hope that, you know, for a woman getting access to family planning so that she can choose not to have 12 children, which is a lot for a body to deal with.
Explain to me, so what is the male viewpoint on that?
In terms of...
of, like...
you know, maybe go and get something snipped.
I mean, does that happen, or
it's not? So,
I mean, I know that having a lot of kids in some cultures is a sign of, you know, wealth or prosperity, or, you know what I mean? So many different things, virility, you know, I mean, does it seem like it would stunt a male viewpoint?
I think it depends as well culturally on where that man is coming from. I mean, certainly in more some of the urbanized areas and in certain countries around the world, we do see a lot more counseling happening with a couple. So for a long time, family planning has been very much women's sexual reproductive health as opposed to actually sexual reproductive health, because both of you are involved in this process. And so a lot of the work that some of the organizations I'm doing is now much more couples family planning, and even talking about it as future planning instead of family planning. So it doesn't have to necessarily involve a family. Let's take that out of the equation. How do you want to plan your future? Especially if you're a young girl, you might be planning for your future to go to university, and therefore contraception is the way forward. And, you know, this man...
And is it legal there? I mean, obviously,
it's legal to. Yeah, it's absolutely legal for family planning everywhere. Abortion is a different story, in different places. But access to family planning is good in most places. But sometimes social norms get in the way. So having lots of children, because some of the children may die, is still a thing.
Right.
But then you're kind of like, well, if you had more access to healthcare, and if you had more money because you had less children, then you're more likely for your children to survive and be able to go to school. So you're trying to turn around social norms and conventions that have existed for decades, if not centuries. And that just takes time. It's behavior change.
And I mean, here, even there are people that still don't believe in, you know, all these things.
again, don't get me started.
And what about like countries like South Africa, where like AIDS is so prominent?
When I was down in Botswana, and my work there was mainly focused on HIV/AIDS, which certainly in the 80s and the 90s was a prominent issue. It's still a prominent issue, but the thing with HIV/AIDS now is it's a disease that people can live with. At that stage, you know, there's an amazing book called Funerals Are for Fridays, because so many people were dying of HIV in Botswana, South Africa, and Southern Africa, that it was what you did. And people had funeral clubs where they would save together in the same way that we might save, you know, for a rainy day. They were saving for whichever member of their family or their community needed a funeral next.
Oh, that's devastating.
It was devastating. But that is not the case. HIV and AIDS is now, you know, it's a disease that people can live with. The drugs are really so much better. There's also ways in terms of looking for pre-exposure and drugs to resolve that. We're also seeing as well, you know, we've had massive gains in terms of reducing transmission of HIV from mother to child.
Mm-hmm.
So in fact, we've eliminated that in most places because that caused so many issues as well. You know, a woman got pregnant and she passed the disease to her child. And then, you know, it just perpetuated and continued
sure.
and continued.
Sure, sure, sure.
But again, this is, you know, social norms, getting people to wear a condom, getting people to understand that it's not, you know, something that isn't a problem, that, you know, they can live a longer life. If your life expectancy is only 42 and you're being told not to take risks and yet you think you might die in the next 4 years, it's a very different conversation than if you think your life expectancy is 77 and there's something worth living for. So we need to bring in the different cultural contexts into it,
yeah.
And understand why people may make the decisions that they do. And you know, instead of going with answers, going and learning and supporting them to find their own answers to these things. So even in the sort of like 10 years I've been working in international development, I do think there've been a lot of changes to you know, going the first time to Uganda and just telling people what they needed to do versus going
right.
a few years later. And it's kind of like, hey, let's talk about what you need and how we can support you.
When's the last time you were there?
The last time I was there was probably 2017, 2018. And, you know, I'm desperate to get back. So.
Oh, God, I can imagine. I've never been there and I've always wanted to go.
I mean, the thing about these places as well is whilst, you know, obviously health is an issue, and as it is in this country, but one of the big things is just the energy that there is in these places. You know, that people, it's a little bit like anywhere in the world, right? But you just, it feels different than the energy here. The color in the markets, there's a lot of street markets.
You can hear it in that
you
song.
You can hear it in that song.
I mean,
that
you
song,
really
you know,
can.
You know that song was developed
somewhere,
you know, in the slums of Kampala, and people are,
you
know, there's a little shebeen, there's some music,
yeah.
there's some dancing, and the energy. But, you know, there's that side of it. There's also, you know, the places in Ethiopia like Addis Ababa, and, you know, Ethiopia, amazing country. And again, another country that has
an
just
amazing
having
food.
Amazing food as well. Yes, there is that. Although the raw meat you would not enjoy anyway,
well,
but I can
no.
assure you it's not a good idea. Been there, done that, don't do it. Not good for the digestive system. But, you know, Ethiopia is going through its troubles now as well with a leader who is, you know, taking them back pretty much to civil war and famine and, you know, the UN warning there. But again, a country where, you know, you drive around and there is such energy, there's business, there's entrepreneurship, there are people coming up with solutions. It's, you know, Nigeria, Ethiopia, South Africa, these countries have entrepreneurs creating apps, creating new ideas, ways of doing
oh,
stuff
so
that is
wonderful.
Just so vibrant. And I think oftentimes there's this sense in international development, certainly, that, oh, you know, the developed nations, again, are taking things to other countries. And so often that is not the case. Oftentimes it is, all we're taking is opportunity and maybe the opportunity for a voice to be heard and potentially a bit of funding and investment to support the already amazing ideas that are there.
That are there,
and
that are coming,
you know,
from
the,
their own.
Exactly.
From within.
Exactly. From people who know what the problems are and have already thought about the solutions, but maybe don't have access to finance or access to networks in mm-hmm. the same way that we might do over here.
What an amazing job you have. God, I could literally sit here and listen to you for hours.
Well, yeah, my husband doesn't feel the same way, but like wittering on again. But it is, it's fun, and I feel very fortunate to do it. And yet at the same time, I'm also, you know, I look at so many other people around the world who also do amazing things. And I'm like, oh, that looks like someone who runs a flower shop. I'm like, that looks really nice. So, you know, we
yes.
all have our things.
Oh,
we all have our things.
Absolutely.
You know, you get to eat yummy cakes that you get your husband to make every day. So.
Yeah, I probably should eat less of them.
Well, they're, no, keep eating. That's what life's about. So,
no,
but
we,
yeah. So do we want to listen to another song now?
Oh, or we do.
Because this one that we're going to play now is probably one that everyone knows about Africa. It's like I think it might be the continent's
the
kind
one.
Of like, you know, if you're not in Africa, probably everyone in Africa is like, oh, not again, that song. But
it's probably not even allowed to be played on the continent.
Maybe not. But I'm sure people will recognize it as it gets started.
Adam has this funny story about when he lived in China, and it was during a time when it was like a really famous Celine Dion song came out, and he was teaching in Chengdu, and they literally, in like all the cafes and restaurants, there would be signs that would say, no Celine Dion played.
I hear the drum. drums are going tonight. She hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, "Hurry, boy, it's waiting there for you."
Yes, everybody should be definitely loving that old-timey song.
It's just something about it. I mean, I think, you know, to me, it's not even about Africa. It's almost as kind of like trite as the whole Live Aid, kind of like there won't be snow in Africa at Christmas, this, you know, and you're like, oh, no. But there's something about just the rhythm to it, I think,
I will have to say that I got to perform that song live on stage with the Flaming Lips.
Live Aid or?
No, the song.
Toto.
No, the Live Aid song.
Oh, wow. Okay.
With the Flaming Lips in like 1997 or something. It was really fun.
There was a new Christmas song in the UK this year about sausage rolls that Ed Sheeran did with Elton John. And I think my husband would probably cry if he had to ever hear it again because it was being played everywhere. And it was all about sausage rolls, so not good. But I started talking about birds, and I wanted to tell you a little bit about probably my favorite bird experience from Africa.
Tell me.
So we were in Ethiopia. We had to get back to Addis really, really quickly for a meeting with the Minister of Health. And so in some weird way, someone decided, let's get a plane. We were about 14 hours to drive to Addis, and they said, it'll take 40 minutes in a plane. We're just going to get a plane to come and get us. This was the most glamorous thing that had ever happened to me in my life.
Oh, like a private plane.
A private plane.
Ooh.
And so we're sitting basically in a field, and I'm like, where's the airport? And that was the airport. As a plane circles overhead, a guy on a bike cycles up to this field, unlocks the gate, ushers us into this field where the grass was as high as me. And then suddenly this plane lands. I have no idea how he did it. The guy comes out of the plane, picks up our bags, gets back in the plane, motions us over. We get into the plane. And I'm like, this feels unsafe. I'm, you know, how is my life insurance situation? And so he turns around and he starts taxiing again down the field and like through more grass. And I'm like, you can like have a more out of Africa experience. And I really do hope I'm going to get out of Africa because, again, does not feel safe. And we get up into the air and he gives his safety chat, which I'm pretty sure, based on the fact I'm married to a pilot, he should have given a few minutes earlier. And then he said, but I do want to show you the birds. And I said, okay, that's great. That doesn't feel safe either. And he said, don't worry. We'll go down really low so you can see them close. And again, I'm like, I don't want to go down really low to see them close. Anyway, he takes us down really close. And what he meant by birds was about 15,000 to 20,000 flamingos in this lake. And he literally, we're just gliding across the lake really low. And these flamingos, some of them flying very close to us, others just looking up at us in this amazing sea of pink. It was truly one of those moments where, again, you kind of go, I am so lucky to do what I do and see these kind of things.
That's a great visual to end on.
Just a beautiful, beautiful moment.
I can imagine. Yeah. Kate, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's fun to be here.
I've been everywhere.
Thank you, Vashon Island. I'm Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies.